Hey, welcome to the podcast for Empathy and Imagination. My name is Aubrey Cloutier.
And I am Drew Clark.
And here we are, episode 15.
Welcome, everybody. Thank you for being here. We're here in Richmond at Chateau Drew. And we are very grateful you are all here with us today. Appreciate your time.
Thanks for listening.
The podcast for Empathy and Imagination, the show where we empathetically connect with people's feelings and needs, and we use our imagination to explore what's possible. Today, we are going to jump right in with a very special guest. Ladies and gentlemen and otherwise, please welcome Ali Salari, a talented entrepreneur in the East Bay of California. Please say hello, Ali.
Hey there.
Hey.
How's everybody?
All right. Thank you very much for being here. I understand you're a very busy man. I know you have important meetings to be to and decisions to make, and I appreciate your time.
Definitely. Glad to be here.
Hey, Ali, it's Aubrey. Good to see you, man.
Yeah, Aubrey, how are you, man?
Good, good. Remember when we partied in the Albany Tap Room that one night?
Of course.
Oh, yeah. What happened?
How can I forget that?
Oh, man. We've had some good times at the Albany Tap Room. Actually, you and I worked there. We were co-workers together. I know I was a beer tender and you had a different title. We had some good times there.
Yep. Definitely was a good time.
Okay. So, welcome, Ali. And I want to bring up a couple of topics, and we're just going to start talking about it. So there's no, it's not exactly a question. It's more like a topic. So just be creative, just be yourself. So the topic I want to talk about is negotiations. Now, I think you are somebody who I know who's had a lot of experience with different kinds of negotiations. You've been a good interpreter between parties negotiating different kinds of things. Yeah. So what do you think about negotiation? Like, how does negotiation affect your life as an aspect or a tool or an activity? What's it like for you? Why do you do it?
I think, honestly, we do negotiate every day for everything. That's how I see things. But it's all about the communication, and some people, they don't know how to do that, or they do it and they're not doing it, they don't know, they're negotiating something, and maybe they're calling it different things, but to me, we are negotiating in every communication, we negotiate. Like, I can give you one example, as we have.
Please do.
We were trying to set up a time to come up with this podcast, and we negotiate the time and a slot we have with both. Everybody's available at the same time to get this podcast done. It's a very simple thing. That's what we did. And again, we did negotiate all the time. So, and you can imagine how negotiation kind of starts from a simple thing of scheduling a meeting or a podcast to negotiate a multi-million-dollar deal.
And you've done both.
I've done both, yes. And it's just getting complex.
Okay.
It's getting more complicated when you start doing the bigger thing that takes more time. But the basic doesn't change. You have to keep the communication open.
Nice. Okay, so then would you say that your experience of negotiation actually happens really everywhere, and that it's just something that you pick up on and use in bigger ways?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I didn't get the last part.
No, what I mean is, do you experience negotiation as an element that it goes through all parts of life?
Yes, okay. I do believe that.
Okay, interesting.
How much does empathy factor into successful negotiations?
Very much.
How so?
Yes, very much. I guess if you want to have a serious negotiation, empathy always is there, because I guess one of the elements goes into negotiation is empathy. That's me.
Okay.
What are some of the other elements that go into negotiation?
I guess trust. The other aspect of the negotiation, there are many things that you can just imagine about what could make a negotiation flow or break.
Well, I would add awareness. Awareness is another element of negotiation. Trust, I think, is good. Empathy is good. I think those are good.
Yes. I mean, yes. Awareness. I mean, and I mean, to be open to communicate also is another way also. I can always put it that way because I see many people, they're not willing to talk about that and they're not open to communicate. That's a problem. And when that's where the any kind of communication or negotiation is going to end, you don't have anything to talk about.
Would you say it would be important when going into negotiations having clear goals in mind?
I mean, yes. That's, of course, we have... I wouldn't always put it this way. There are the things that you cannot compromise and there are the things that you are willing to compromise. So if you have them separated before going to any negotiation, then you know where you can compromise, when you cannot. And where are the things that they are not negotiable? And where are the things that you can negotiate about?
Mm-hmm. Okay, that sounds cool.
So that's almost, it's almost a way of saying, what are you willing to walk away from?
Oh.
Sure, yes. Having that line set before going to negotiate or deal in any kind of situation, that's a deal breaker. So you say that I do not do these things, that's for sure. And you stick with that, and the rest, you can negotiate. The terms, whatever you're looking for, you can negotiate, and you can see in any combination of situation, maybe that speaks to your needs or your whatever you're looking. Mm-hmm. But there are lines that you don't pass.
So you have...
Good time. I don't... Yes, sir.
Go ahead.
I don't want to say that... I mean, we have different lines. There is no good or bad in what line is best, what line is better, what is good. I'm not going to judge about that.
Nice.
I'm saying that there are the things that you stick and you personally, you cannot cross. That's your line.
Right.
Maybe that line doesn't apply to me.
Right. So just the general concept of having clear boundaries, clear and healthy boundaries in a negotiation is important.
Definitely is important.
Outside of judgment of those boundaries.
How do you establish clear boundaries in a negotiation? How do you do that?
I mean, it's very subjective to the nature of the negotiation.
Okay, give me an example, Ali, of your talent. Tell me about your skill. Give me a real-world example, if you can, about how you made boundaries clear.
I'm a terrible negotiator for myself, so I have to put that on first. Yes, that's the thing. I can negotiate for everybody. I cannot negotiate for myself. I don't know why. I tried it many times, and the things that I expect people to know how good am I, but the problem is that they don't expect how good am I. But I can negotiate for people the best of the best I can get out. But for myself, I'm just so kind of let it go. That's okay. I can do this. I can. Okay. Let me give you some example.
Yeah,
maybe,
please.
My expectations are low. That's why I cannot. I mean, I'm an easygoing person, so I can be happy with whatever. So that's why people are taking advantage of me, and I cannot even negotiate for myself.
I hear that.
So, yes. Let's go back to one real example of the real world. So I would say I can. So I can get one example from my sales experience. The time was I was a sales manager. And so in that position, that goes between 2002 to 2005.
Okay, thank you.
And I was a sales manager for industrial equipment.
Okay.
And I was selling everything in that field. And I was, honestly, that was a very interesting experience for me as far as it goes, because I was seeing a very kind of different people, a super wide kind of range of people with a different negotiating skills, and you have to deal with them, because I was a sales and they were buyers, and they had their own strategy, and some of them, they were so good, and it would take me for a long, long time.
What makes them good? How are they good?
I mean, the aspect of they were playing with us, not with me particularly, with the pricing, with the they just knowing that, okay, in the negotiation, depending on which side of the whole thing are you, you are going to go see, as a sales, I was looking to see how desperate are they to buy something, and how vulnerable, actually, you can put it this way, that person is, or that company is, or that need. If they are very vulnerable, so I can take advantage, and in my negotiation, I can speak firmer to my price and whatever service.
Okay.
But if I see they're not, honestly, they have many options and I'm not the only, or the time-wise, they're not strained with any time and they can do it, or they're not in rush, they're just planning it. This is all matters when we go to negotiations. So having enough information of what situation you're getting into is also, to me, very important. So,
do you have categories of situations, or is it just sort of everyone is defined by itself?
Yeah, I mean, every case was honestly different. But okay. one of the things was, always before start approaching, I was just gathering information. And for the first shot, I mean, the industrial sales is a long, business is business first, and is a long, kind of long cycle there. So it's not about the Amazon, you want to buy $1,500 or whatever, something there. It's bigger. You want to spend minimum $50,000 to a couple of million dollars. And for this kind of decision-making, people, they're not going crazy and they do it right away. I mean, some people, maybe they do, but at least not in the field I was selling. And that's give you enough time that, okay, my strategy was, okay, have a clear strategy. If there is a returning customer, or if there is a new customer, the pricing, the code prices, and everything was different. And I was giving myself and company enough time to know that that person and or that company, and just figure out how is their decision-making process goes? How is their thought process? So, and in a bunch of training, I've been for sales, and that's one of the things that you have to be a palm reader. You have to read people.
Huh,
that's
okay.
For fact.
So you have to kind of connect with what's alive in them.
Sure. You always have to see. I mean, I've been trained for the body language reading. I've been trained to how to read people. I mean, it's not about saying that I can 100% read, but I can guess. It's going to narrow down my judgment. Say, okay.
Yeah, there are some generalizations that are accurate.
Exactly.
You know?
So I can just narrow down, and maybe I'm wrong. Maybe along the way, say, all right, I got to I read that sign or signal wrong. It could be that too. But that's the thing. That's always practice.
That's
when you encounter some, yes.
That's empathy and awareness.
Yes, that's exactly. So you have to be alert and aware of the situation. And in the whole situation, you have to stay alert.
Okay.
To read. And then you document, you come back, you talk with your whatever supervisor, manager, colleague, whatever you have. I mean, that's how the sales company is structured. Some of them, they are so good, which they train you well, you don't need to actually do. But I mean, that's a part of the negotiation we did. So gathering information, knowing who you're dealing with, being alert in the whole situation, reading them, come up with a strategy, and then go back to your the boundaries you have and see, check those things with your boundaries and let's see where you can see it. And then the whole negotiation going to start from there. So, all right, these are the things I have. This is the situation. That's my boundary. That's their boundaries. That's what I figure out. Then you can come up with something. Say, all right, that's your negotiation strategy.
It's kind of like boundaries first, back, then.
Yeah.
Well, I think it's what to kind of summarize or paraphrase what you said. You kind of enter a certain context and you try to remain alert and aware and gather information, read body language, and use empathy to establish clear boundaries and keep an openness to communicate and always keep your goal in mind. Is that correct?
I would also add one more thing to that. Also, you have to make a rapport with the people. You have to make friends. In any kind of situation, it's easier to see let the people open up to see what's going on in their mind, to be more friendly rather than more formal.
Got it.
So I would add that. So always you have to be friendly in that process. Either otherwise, it's super hard to get anything out of people.
It is a human.
Yes.
It is a human process, after all. I mean, that's above all else. You're dealing with other human beings who are very much like yourself, right?
Ali, let me ask you a question. Okay, from your dealings with negotiation, how you see it as a part of your life, and how you've done brokered major deals and you've helped develop boundaries, what would you say is the kind of most important top 1 to 3 things you've learned about being a professional negotiator? What are some things you've learned?
Keep the communication open. Never close the door. That's what I say.
Cool. Okay. Even if it seems never. Like, okay.
I mean, you always can say and close the door. That's for sure. And to me, that's the last resort option I have.
Okay. So
I do not close door easily because I think in any situation, you never know. It's a very dynamic situation and it's always changing. So if it is not working now, maybe it's going to work maybe within a month or two. You never know.
Okay.
You never close that door. So I never close any door.
Never close the
never,
door.
Never, ever.
And when the door opens, be ready to walk through.
Mm. Exactly. Never close the door. I mean, that's the thing that I never end any employment with any bad term because you never know. Then maybe they need me some other time.
Yeah.
Then maybe I have a better option to negotiate that time. But if we cannot work now, I guess that's fine. I mean, that's going to happen. That's unfortunate, and that's happening in life. Two people and one person in one company cannot work together, which is fine. But that doesn't mean that you do not have any option to go back. I don't believe that. I think that if you close the door and you... very, very professionally, if you close that one, definitely you can reopen that door.
Are you walking outside now, Ali? Hold on.
Thanks,
folks.
Ali.
We lost
it. Sounded like he got out of his car and was doing something.
That's what it sounded like.
Sounded like to me.
Okay, we're trying to get Al Salari back on the line.
Sorry,
Drew. Hey, it's okay. How you doing? Everything all right?
I'm doing okay. Yes. Hold on. Can I get a venti sour coffee?
I get a venti.
Can I get
a large venti strawberry macchiato, mayonnaise macchiato?
Can I have David tri-tip sandwich there? Can I get bring me one of those?
What do you want?
Tri-tip sandwich.
All right. I'll get it for myself. How about that?
Close enough.
Honestly, I'm super hungry too, but I have time just to get
it, man. Get your thing.
All right, so I'm all set. So let's get back to business.
I have a new question for you, Ali.
Yes.
go ahead.
We're going to do a whole new topic, and if we could... We got
Can we do this second topic another time?
We can. We could do that. So let's just do, if you're done, let's just do a sign off. Let's have you say goodbye to the crowd.
Yes. Okay. Yes. I just wanted to wrap up what you said.
Yeah.
And kind of summarize what you said. Obviously, actually did a great summarization there. If you want to repeat that one, then we can finish this podcast. And definitely, I'm willing to do another one, whatever topic you got. I really interested. And obviously, I can just be a listener the next time. I don't want to be, I mean, not necessarily supposedly I should talk all the time.
Yeah, well, it's all going to work out. Let's wrap up. Let's have you summarize, and then we'll have you say goodbye to the audience, and we'll go from there.
Okay. Perfect. Okay. I mean,
so go ahead and start.
Should I summarize, or
whenever you're ready, go ahead and start.
I would like to Aubrey had a great summarization. If you can go too, I can just confirm all of that.
Here he's getting ready. Yeah, he's going
to
do that.
Yeah, that was sort of improvised, but I'll try to do it again.
Okay. Go ahead.
So you enter a certain negotiating context, and you gather information, you establish rapport, and you remain mm-hmm. alert and aware while you read body language, and use empathy to remain open to communication while at the same time retaining clear boundaries.
And you had one thing to add. You wanted to add rapport.
Yes. And that was in as Aubrey said, it is all about human interaction. So yes. It is also very important to have, to, as I said, don't close the door. So be friendly, lead friendly, and stay friend for next round of negotiations.
That's great. That sounds really profound to me.
Yes.
Okay. Well, thank you, Ali. I really appreciate your time.
Thanks
and
a lot.
I wish you well. Let's talk soon. And thank you very much.
All right. Thank you, everybody. Have a good day. Bye.
Thank you. Bye. Bye.
Okay, folks. We'd like to take this time now to give you a word from our sponsor, Final Corp. 50 flavors of mayonnaise. 50 kinds of uses for multi-A's. Of course, introducing their new product, Nays. It's a multi-fruit-flavored mayonnaise-based carbonated beverage. Mm-hmm. When you're at the skate park, think Nays.
That's right.
Also, we've got the new thing, and we've talked about it a little bit, but you know, it's a think about this. You're out on the golf course and, you're walking around and all of a sudden you got to pee really bad. Well, I mean, you don't want to put your wiener in one of those empty golf clubs. That's weird. Imagine, say you were at a festival. You're out like walking around outside and you just had to go, but you couldn't really pull your wiener out. But there's kind of mist going on. The misters are spraying and things are happening. And imagine if you could just attach a mister to your mister. Introducing the mister.
By Final Corp. It'll be fine.
Spray a mist out of your penis. Are you tired of peeing a normal old strain of urine? Don't you wish you could be peeing a mist?
I do.
Final Corp introduces the Mister.
Final Corp.
Let's see what we got.
What do we got here? What's next?
All right, this is a weird thing. Have you ever heard of this is something like I just stumbled upon, and it's very fascinating, unique, and I don't think a lot of people have heard of this. So, for a little background, do you know about shortwave radio?
I've heard that term.
It's a thing.
You mean ham radio?
Yeah. Essentially, yeah, shortwave radio. There's this thing, there's these things called numbers stations. Have you heard of this?
I've been to a demonstration of shortwave radio. I think I may have heard of it, but keep going.
Number stations? This is so fascinating. A number station, this is from Wikipedia, A numbers station is a type of shortwave radio station characterized by unusual broadcasts, reading out lists of numbers or incomprehensible coded messages. The voices are often created by speech synthesis and are transmitted in a wide variety of languages. The voices are usually female, although sometimes men's or children's voices are used. Some voices are synthesized and created by machines. However, some stations used to have live readers. Many number stations went off the air due to the end of the Cold War in 1989, but many still operate, and some have since continued operations but changed schedules and operations.
What?
All right.
This is completely. You lost me.
This is really bizarre.
Well, yeah, what is that?
It's basically a shortwave radio. Imagine a broadcast on shortwave radio, right? And you listen to it, and it's just a repetitive string of numbers. Let's say
3, 7, 6, 1, 4, 9.
Read by a synthesized female voice, or sometimes a live voice, sometimes in Russian or English, what have you, and sometimes precluded or. Precluded by a little sound bite. Let me give you an example.
Please do.
It's hard to describe because no one has really heard of these things, yet they're continually broadcasting. It's very interesting. So here's one. This one is a shortwave radio signal, and it's been nicknamed the Lincolnshire Poacher. Okay? Listen to this.
Wow, that just why are we broadcasting that?
We actually don't know who exactly is broadcasting that. That's a signal that's been picked up by shortwave radio operators, picked up the signal.
Okay.
Very intriguing, right?
Yeah.
And a lot of people suspect that these signals are basically espionage codes.
What?
Yeah.
What does that mean? I don't know what that means.
Let's say you're James Bond in the field.
Easy.
You have a radio receiver. Very small device, right? You can't transmit, but you can receive.
Got it.
So you tune in to the special frequency, and you hear... 0588. You tune into that frequency, and 0588, you know what that means. That's a code to you for some kind of a directive, something you have to do. So they're giving you codes over the air. That's the espionage part of it.
Got it.
You tune into the certain frequency, you get your orders.
That was explained well. I actually understand now.
And it's one way.
Yeah, that's just orders. You don't get to respond.
No. And there's so many fascinating things about this. First known use is World War I.
Huh.
So it coincides, and again, they said drop off after the Cold War. So it coincides with wartime. That's hence the speculation about, okay, this is like espionage.
Yeah.
Communiques.
Yeah.
That one we just heard is thought to have been run by the British Secret Intelligence Service.
They were trying to tell our spy something?
Yeah. They're communicating with someone with that. Now, there's actually there's this thing called the CONET project, okay? And this is a project to compile a bunch of these recordings of number stations. Mm-hmm. Number stations have been reported since World War I. If accurate, this would count number stations among the earliest radio broadcasts. It has long been speculated and was argued in court in one case that these stations operate as a simple and foolproof method for government agencies to communicate with spies working undercover.
Mm-hmm. That seems reasonable.
Others speculate that some of these stations may be related to illegal drug smuggling operations. Who knows? There was one I wanted to play. Hold on.
I was thinking it might be cool. I really like the idea of bringing a short piece of some audio in and then talking about it for some reason. That's cool.
Hmm.
I like that.
50 flavors of mayonnaise, 50 years of experience.
0573 0573
50 flavors of mayonnaise, 50 years of experience.
0573 0573 That sounds hopeful, you know? It's a warm feeling.
Mm. So one of these number stations is thought to operate out of Russia. And this one is particularly interesting. It's been nicknamed UVB-76. UVB-76, also known as, quote-unquote, the buzzer, is the nickname given by radio listeners to a shortwave radio station that broadcasts on the frequency 4625 kilohertz. It broadcasts a short, monotonous buzz tone, repeating at a rate of approximately 25 tones per minute, 24 hours per day. Now, the first reports were made of a station on this frequency in 1982. It's been broadcasting the same shit since then.
Still?
Yeah.
Why?
Yeah. So it's a buzz tone repeated at a certain frequency since 1982, continuously. It went out, you know, went offline for a very short period of time. But it's very interesting. Its official name is not known. Up until 2010, the station identified itself as UVB-76. In September 2010, the station moved to another location and used a different identification. Sometimes this buzzing sound is constant, okay, for what, 34 years? Sometimes this sound is interrupted and a voice message is broadcast. These messages are usually given in Russian by a live voice and follow a fixed format. How fascinating and bizarre is this whole thing?
It's just like it is. I would call it, like, I can still hear the ringing. Is that the sound?
No, that's just the computer.
Okay. It's a high pitched, it makes me feel like it might be what it's like to listen to because I haven't heard it yet.
Okay. So here's the station UVB-76. This number station that's been broadcasting since 1982. Here's a clip. So it's been doing that since 1982, essentially.
Wow.
And occasionally a Russian voice comes on and says something.
Like what?
Well, let's see. Something like, yeah, UVB-76, yeah, UVB-76, 18008, Bromal, 74279914, Bois, Roman, Olga, Mikhail, Anna, Larissa, 74279914. That's a direct quote. voice messages were thought to be very rare. There has only been like 12 or 10 voice messages in the 34 years that the station has been broadcasting. It's so fascinating, dude.
Wow, that's like someone's secret message point.
Yeah. And so there's this thing, the Konet Project, I think that's what it's called. They've compiled a bunch of these number stations. Check some of these out. It's so interesting.
Thank you.
This is what certain stations are broadcasting 24/7. This. Isn't that just like creepy?
It is. It's like it seems like
it's like surreal and very creepy and very intriguing and bizarre.
If I wanted to send a message to only one person who was not close to me, I could have this conversation beforehand. We'd set it up together. They'd be on the bandwidth, and they'd know that listening to it most of the time was pointless, but we'd have a prefixed date mm-hmm. and time mm-hmm. where you turn it on,
right?
And you're going to hear some shit that only you're going to hear. And then other people are going to hear some noise, but it's going to take a month to figure out what it means.
Yeah.
And you have that information now.
And they probably will never figure out what it means because there's a thing called a one-time pad, which is almost impossible to crack. Hmm. And this is what the agents in the field have. It's a one-way code. And only because they have, there's one version of how to decrypt it, it's super secure.
Yeah, it's like super encrypted.
Yeah. So, how intriguing is this shit?
3-2-8 3-2-8 I mean, it could be. 3-2-8 It could be that the tonal inflection is the message, and the number is
totally.
Just a distraction. I mean, totally. It could be that the buzz is the certain frequency the message is. I mean, like it could be anything.
The background noise is the message.
Yeah.
All the other shit is. Superfluous.
It's like any of those things are totally possible and or likely.
The fact that some of these stations have been operating for decades is insane. You know,
it's just
and because specifically the buzzer one we listened to, people think that it's not actually a direct like machine with a direct line out. They think it's a microphone that's put next to a buzzer because sometimes they can hear stuff in the background, like Russian voices talking in the background.
Mm-hmm.
And that's like, to me, that's so interesting. What is there? It's some fallout shelter bunker underground where there's a microphone set up that's right next to a buzzer and people are just doing this work. I mean, it's so fascinating. Here are a couple more.
Give us a little bit more.
There's a French one.
Group 3-0. Group 3-0. 2-4-0.
The fact that there's so much background noise, like that's where the signal is. The noise being the signal.
Mm-hmm. That's probably the information they're decoding on the other end. I wonder if we could run some programming to catch what numbers might be tossed up in the
wavelengths. A lot of people have run these things through a lot of different
decryption methods. So people have done this already.
But it's so hard to decrypt because you don't know what you're looking for. You know, that's the whole thing. If you don't know what you're looking for, you can just spin your wheels.
Well, I mean, you could maybe build an educated guess on what you're looking for.
But again, if you have a one-time pad, there's really no way to crack that. we don't know what they're sending you.
Yeah, if there was two pieces of information, then it would be a lot easier to figure out what's going on. With just one, it's like,
yeah,
meh.
Yep. You need both halves.
It doesn't even need to be boxed. It's already got one.
I had three or four of these and thinking it changes. A little bit different. There's now a...
There's the other whistle.
So two groups of three. The second three are weirder than the first three. And then it changes up again. So this is the third one. Changes. Get the idea. Just that pattern, 24 hours a day.
And then every so years, they just slip in some words.
Yeah, I mean, these are multiple. These are different stations. These are all different stations I've been playing.
Does that repeat all the time what we just heard, just as it is, 24/7?
Yeah, pretty much. Almost all of these stations have a little sequence like that, that it's just repeated.
And then it's interrupted occasionally?
That one particular Russian buzzer station, yes. But usually it's just like this loop. Usually the stations are just this loop.
There's no interruption on most of the stations?
Right.
Wow.
And there was that Russian station called the buzzer. Usually it's just a buzzer. And then, you know, every 5 years, some guy comes on, some girl comes on, says a bunch of numbers and a bunch of names. Anyway, numbers stations, and if you look up the CONET project, CONET project, the CONET project, they've compiled a bunch of these excerpts from number stations, and it's like pretty creepy, man. It's like very creepy. Creepy, fascinating.
Yeah, shortwave radio stations. That feels interesting. I feel like this feeling of like astoundment and confusion and amazement that exists. Because kind of like someone had to put energy into that. That wasn't just easy. You had to need to do that for a reason.
And then you
were like, I need to have this be a channel that I can just use if I need to. And somebody used it.
Mm.
And then there's some other ones that might be used later. And it's like,
yeah,
that's cool. That there's like meta level communication stuff going on the planet.
Because you could say, oh, how do I know that HQ is still operational? Well, because they're just sending out this continual signal of a buzzer.
I got to learn about ham radio in a really interesting way.
Recently?
No, years ago.
Huh.
Ham radio seems really important. It's like, if stuff breaks down, say the banks fall again, right? You know, they fell before, they were bailed out, maybe it'll happen again, you know. Anyways,
But you have some skills?
I got some cool experience. So I was living in my boat at the Berkeley Marina, and I happened to be in the middle of a medicine experience.
Huh.
I was, in fact, under the influence of an entheogen, and I was walking around the park, the Cesar Chavez Park at the Berkeley Marina, and there was this huge tent and a bunch of dudes with lights sitting at tables with weird equipment on these tables. Mm. And they were all like mega into it. And there weren't any screens really. It was all like different knobs and stuff. Maybe a computer here and there. But they were all ham radio like experts having this big expose in the middle of the night at the Berkeley Marina. And I was just walking around and they're like, yeah, come on in. Do you want to get on the ham? I was like, yeah. And I sat down in the tent and they're like, yeah, here, say this number and then with this call sign and then let go of the button. And I did. And it was amazing. It was such a cool experience. I really think like that ham radio as a form of communication will be all we have if stuff breaks down.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean,
ham radio is totally independent of the system.
It's shortwave, so it can't go very far. I mean, that's the thing.
That's point, but it's better than nothing. Well, should we do a little summary on that? Wouldn't it be cool if?
So we talked to Ali Salari earlier in the episode, and he had some things to say about negotiation. And I think it's important to reiterate what he said. I think his main takeaway was to be open. Keep the door open. Be open to communication. Always. Keep empathy in the conversation.
Yeah, and when you're feeling stuck, you're not sure what to do, instead of looking at the past, consider imagination as an opportunity. Like, what could happen? You know, what might be the coolest thing? And use your fun imagination to explore that.
That's right, because the past is no predictor of the future. So today we covered negotiation and numbers stations. Drew, do you have maybe a question of the episode for our audience?
I do. My question is, when you close your eyes and imagine a meadow and you're sitting there calmly, you can hear the water and the birds. And then all of a sudden, a stage emerges in front of you. And on top of it, there's a bass player and a piano and a drummer. And this begins. What do you picture?
I'd like to thank everyone for listening. I'd like to thank Final Corp for supporting the show.
Thank you, Final Corp.
See you next time.
Imagination?
Imagination.
Imagination.
Okay. Oh, it started over. That's why.